it's cool and interesting and also scary how something that's happening in Storm Lake, Iowa can affect the environment all the way down in the Gulf of Mexico. Like, I don't think that people really understand the implications.
People in Iowa do not want to recognize that growing corn is choking the Gulf of Mexico and it's causing cancer in children in Iowa.
Yeah.
Because it's our bread and butter.
Welcome to Rooted, Girls, the River, and the Fight for Environmental Justice, a podcast created by young women for young women to explore the connections between our local communities and our Mississippi River-centered environment. Her Voice Media Fellows ask the important questions in this series, like who has access to clean water, how environmental changes and decisions affect everyday people, and most importantly, how young people can create positive, sustainable change.
Hi, my name is Ileana. I am 17 years old. If someone poured pollution into your backyard every day, how long would it take you to speak up about it? For today's guest, that question became a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation into what was happening to Iowa rivers and lakes. Welcome to Rooted, Girls, the River, and the Fight for Environment Justice. Today, we're excited to welcome Art Cullen, editor and co-owner of the Storm Lake Times pilot in Northwest Iowa. Art won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on agriculture pollution and its impact on Iowa's rivers and lakes. Art's reporting has shown that local journalism can make a real difference when it comes to holding powerful institutions accountable and protecting our environment.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm the editor of the Storm Lake Times pilot in Northwest Iowa. And I'm a native of Storm Lake. My brother and I own the newspaper together. And I work with my wife, Dolores, and son, Tom, who's our managing editor. And I'm kind of semi-retired now, but in 2017, I was fortunate to win the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing regarding the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit against Buena Vista, Calhoun and Sac counties in Northwest Iowa, all heavily farmed counties, for pollution of the Raccoon River. The Des Moines Water Works sued our counties for pollution of the Raccoon River with ag chemicals, specifically nitrate, nitrogen fertilizer to grow corn. And it kind of engendered a conversation in Iowa about water, or it amplified, I should say, a conversation in Iowa about water quality, which is kind of reaching a full froth, as it were, right now, with a lot of talk about connections between water quality and cancer in Iowa. And so we've been writing about this for 30 years, and finally, people are talking about it.
That's so interesting. First, I think it's awesome that you have this family business in publishing. Her Voice Media is also, me and my sister do the podcast together. My mom is very heavily involved, and she was a writer. Kayla majored.
She likes to tell you what to do.
A little too much.
Right.
But it's always fun working with your family, and I think it's also a unique experience working with your family in storytelling and journalism. So we appreciate that.
It's a unique experience. It can be great, and as you know, it can be maddening when you your mother tells you what to do and she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Oh my gosh, you have no idea.
You said it, not us.
I'm just channelizing through my son, Tom, who would say, you know, he has a mother and a father crawling down his back.
Us and Tom.
Start a support group.
Yeah.
A lot of our listeners are in the Quad City area. So Many of us live right next to the Mississippi River. And we work with a lot of young women. We're in schools around the area. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about why young people should care about the health of rivers and waterways.
First of all, Iowa has the most polluted surface water in America. Both the Raccoon River and the Mississippi River have been cited by the American Rivers Project as being among the most endangered rivers in America. And so the Mississippi River is obviously is an important artery in the middle of America. It's hugely important to grain shipment. It's the reason that the Quad Cities exist. It's the reason that Dubuque exists. And it's also a very important ecosystem that leads to the Gulf of Mexico. And we're transforming the Gulf of Mexico with black dirt from Iowa and Illinois and Minnesota and Wisconsin that's suffocating the Gulf and the shrimping industry as we attempt to grow 200 bushels of corn per acre and feed millions upon millions of hogs and hens, and which is connected to the Mississippi River, which is connected to the Raccoon River, which is connected to Storm Lake, Iowa, in northwest Iowa. And what we do here affects what happens in the Quad Cities, where the Quad City sources its water from the Mississippi River, as does St. Louis. And it's a toxic channel right now. It's toxic to humans. It's toxic to aquatic life because of nitrate pollution and phosphorus, which causes algae blooms in the Gulf and the backwaters of the Mississippi River complex.
Can you tell us about nitrate pollution?
Yes. First of all, the single most important thing in Iowa is corn.
Mm.
That's what we've decided. We're going to grow corn here and we're going to feed hogs like nobody's ever grown corn or fed hogs. That is all predicated on nitrogen. Corn demands nitrogen. So we apply nitrogen via anhydrous ammonia. We spray it, actually inject it into the soil, okay, in the fall when we shouldn't. And we lose about 30% of that nitrogen that we apply to both the air and water, which is contributing to greenhouse gases and global warming. And it's also polluting our surface water because there are drainage tiles buried underneath the soil in northern Iowa, which is the heart of the buckle of the Corn Belt. And this is the most productive corn growing region in the world. And again, corn demands nitrogen, and the banker demands that you yield at least 200 bushels of corn per acre. Mm. And if you can't grow 200 bushels of corn per acre on that $15,000 per acre land, then somebody else is going to grow 200 bushels of corn per acre there. Way over applying nitrogen by Iowa State University's own standards. Mm-hmm. They'd say we're putting twice as much nitrogen on as we need to, and we're losing at least 30% of it to the air and water. And so that's what ends up in the Mississippi River from mm-hmm. Storm Lake, and that's what ends up in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's suffocating the aquatic life in the Gulf. And that's very important to the shrimping industry. We're driving Forrest Gump out of business. And so we can grow 200 bushel per acre corn in Iowa and feed all these hogs and turkeys and egg-laying hens. We're number one in pork, number one in turkeys, and number one in egg-laying hens.
Wow. It's cool and interesting and also scary how something that's happening in Storm Lake, Iowa can affect the environment all the way down in the Gulf of Mexico. Like, I don't think that people really understand the implications of what farmers in Iowa are
doing. No, and they don't want to understand the implication. They don't want to understand it.
Yeah.
They don't want to understand that their gas-powered vehicle is burning up the planet.
Yeah.
They do not want to. People in Iowa do not want to recognize that growing corn is choking the Gulf of Mexico and it's causing cancer in children in Iowa.
Yeah.
Because it's our bread and butter.
Right.
It's what we do. It's the reason that John Deere exists, the major employer in the Quad Cities along the Mississippi. It's a very tightly woven blanket.
It sounds very systemic, unfortunately. And I live right on the Mississippi River. Like, I can see it from my primary bedroom and it's a beautiful view. But like, when you look real close, I always see like a lot of pollution and things going on. I know you mentioned cancer, but what other ways are community members affected by the pollution that is happening here?
Well, that there are beach warnings all over Iowa for fecal coliform bacteria. That's from manure that drains into lakes. Storm Lake this year, it's a 3,000-acre lake that was made 14,000 years ago by the recession of the glacier. Huge boulders dug this lake, and it was supposed to be about 26 feet deep. That's the way the glacier left it. But then once we showed up, 150 years ago, the lake was down to 7 feet deep from farmland silting into the lake. And that's what we've done in a very short time period. What's also going to happen in a very short period of time, according to Nobel Prize winning agronomists and climate modelers, is we might not be able to grow corn south of Interstate 80 in 30 to 35 years of climate change. That's how fast we are morphing this planet.
This is making me really nervous. I'm feeling nervous.
You should.
What you're saying is so scary, and I feel like, why don't we have more people talking about it?
Because people don't want to believe that their own daily actions are contributing to us pooping in our nest.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Like, is anybody working on it? Like, who's leading the charge?
There's a scientist in Ames at Iowa State University who's a MacArthur genius. Mm. She received the genius award, Dr. Lisa Schulte Moore. And she's a good old farm girl from Wisconsin who figured out that if you plant 10% of a cornfield to native plantings, grasses and forbs and so on, you can reduce that nitrate outflow from the field by up to 70%. 70%. We know how to cure. If we could do that, we could cure the problem in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
But the problem is that there are no financial incentives in place for farmers to plant those native grasses. He gets paid to plant corn, not flowers.
Yeah.
And so how do we create those incentives? How do we change our industrial ag system to create the kinds of incentives for farmers who would like to do the right thing according to every poll you'll see? They want to be stewards of the land, if they can be. But again, the bankers get in the way, the landlords get in the way, the landlords want their high rent, you know, on that farm ground. So you better grow corn. So we need to change the incentive structure. And we need to change the production models that value, one guy farming 20,000 acres using chemicals.
Yeah. Without being too political, but I feel like you can never not be political. Do you see that happening anytime soon? I know this new administration has their own way of doing things. So I'm just curious on how much kind of hope you have in our government to help assist in moving these type of protections in place so we can
I have almost no hope in our government. Okay. Not zero. to do the right thing, whether Democrat or Republican.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who led us to this precipice. Whether it was, you know, you can talk about Barack Obama and Joe Biden and how they didn't do much of anything about this problem with cancer and poor water quality and soil erosion compared to Donald Trump and George Bush. I challenge anybody to tell me that the problem's gotten better.
Yeah.
It hasn't. It's gotten worse. Yeah. So we cannot count on the political system to solve this. We have to change the incentive structure. And I believe nature is going to do that for us. Mm-hmm. Nature is already saying there isn't enough water for all these cattle in Kansas and Texas. You're going to have to take those cattle someplace else because we're drinking down the aquifer, the Ogallala Aquifer. It's going to be exhausted in 10 to 20 years. You won't be able to raise cattle in Dodge City anymore, Miss Kitty. Mm-hmm. So nature and markets are going to force us into change, I believe. And and the people of Iowa, for example, voted 15 years ago in a constitutional amendment to introduce a permanent stream of funding for clean water. And the Iowa legislature has refused to acknowledge that vote for a constitutional amendment. Over 60% of Iowans voted in favor of clean water, but the legislature, which is funded by the chemical industry, refuses to clean up the water.
Hmm.
Now, I believe we're at a time in Iowa history where we're at a turning point, where people are beginning to recognize, like you guys are, that the Mississippi River is important, and what is it telling us? And you guys are worried about pollution. You guys are worried about whether political systems can adapt to change. And so I think the answer lies in people and in markets. And then political systems will respond to people eventually, as I believe they are now in Iowa.
Yeah.
There's a guy running, for example, for Secretary of Agriculture named Chris Jones, who's actually attracting a lot of attention surrounding clean water. He's getting big crowds in farming towns, and they're interested in this topic about water and cancer. Last summer at Drake University in Des Moines, 1,000 people showed up on a beautiful June evening to talk about nitrate pollution of the Raccoon and Des Moines rivers. 1,000 people. That's a big deal.
That's huge.
The Republican candidate for governor, his name is Zach Lane, L-A-H-N, is now, he's from Belle Plaine. He's now talking about farming without so many chemicals. That's a Republican guy talking, a Farm Bureau kind of guy. So I think change is underfoot and it's being forced by nature.
From hearing you speak, I can tell that you are a natural storyteller and you have such an amazing way with words. I'm wondering if you could talk just a little bit about your career in general. What made you want to get into journalism and writing? Where does your love for storytelling come from?
It probably comes from my parents, who are 100% Irish. And so storytelling was, you know, that's part of our souls. And then I went to college and was going to be a business major, and I flunked accounting because I found it was boring and never went to class. And I found journalism, and the only requirement was that you had to be able to type 25 words a minute. I could do that. And so I got into journalism, and it was the Watergate era. And so there was a lot of attraction, a lot of sex appeal in journalism at the time, Woodward and Bernstein. And I wanted to be Woodward or Bernstein newspaper. And that's honestly how I got into it. It just looked easy. It was the path of least resistance.
Yep.
And I found out it's the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
I did the same thing. I said, oh, I'm going to go into business. I'm going to make all this money. I looked at that course catalog. I said, you know what? This is not for me. I'll make the journalism creative thing work. So I totally understand.
It's getting tougher and tougher to make it work every year. People don't value journalism and facts. And if they did, the newspaper industry wouldn't be going broke, and public broadcasting wouldn't be on its back.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about what it's like now. When you first got into journalism, it felt like a world of possibilities. And as somebody who's also in the media business, it does feel like people are less and less interested in, like you said, facts and hearing the truth. Like, how are you managing your business these days, your newspaper, telling the truth, journalism? Like, what is the landscape looking like for you?
It's very difficult, frankly. And every readership survey that I see will tell you that 15% or fewer of Americans are paying for news, paying for information. And our entire business model is predicated on people buying subscriptions for news. And people are getting almost all their news from Facebook. There was just a study that came out from Reuters just 2 weeks ago talking about how like 70% of Americans are getting their news from Facebook or social media, TikTok. And it's all free, but it's actually paid by somebody. You know, you're getting a grant from somewhere.
Yeah.
And so, you know, beware of you know, of where you're getting your what's free. You think it's free, but nothing's free. And so there's a lot of propaganda on Facebook. A lot of guys sitting in their underwear in Macedonia spreading disinformation about Hillary Clinton, or whomever. That's why I think there's a real crisis in democracy, because we are not operating from a common songbook anymore. It used to be that Iowans would subscribe to the Des Moines Register, and we all had a kind of a similar view of what was going on at the state legislature, and we were dealing in facts. And we weren't in constant war. There was certainly vigorous rivalries going on between the political parties, but they weren't shooting people dead in the street for protesting. And that's what's going on now. And now they're shutting down, trying to sue and shut down news operations because they're telling the truth. That's a fundamental qualitative difference. People are dying in the streets of the Twin Cities, and they're arresting reporters in Des Moines.
Eventually, is our source of truth going to just disappear? So for me, as a journalist, I don't think people understand the gravity and the weight of not having reliable, accurate sources of information. And I'm constantly, especially with the young girls in the magazine, I'm always challenging them to challenge what they're reading, what they're taking in, because this younger generation, not all, but a lot of them are just so quick to believe what they read. And it's starting this pipeline of misinformation that kind of just trickles down. And then before you know it, the facts aren't the facts.
Just recently on Facebook, I saw some so-called Hawkeye site that was suggesting that, Caitlin Clark was getting married that showed her in a wedding dress, or that she was having an affair with Sophie Cunningham, who's another Indiana Fever basketball player. And, you know, complete lies, but it's Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. People believe it.
When you have like these super realistic images or videos, these deep fakes, and young people and people just in general, all people from all generations, when they see something online and it has a photo with it and it feels like it's coming from the Hawkeye, even though it's somebody right. super unqualified running a random Facebook page, it becomes truth to them, you know?
Yeah, like, and these have thousands and thousands of views or more. And it's complete crap.
It's crap. Somebody made it on AI. On
Yet 70% of us are getting most of our news from Facebook and TikTok and Instagram.
Your ideal way of moving forward with journalism? Would it just be for people to get more media literate? Would it be for...
Well, you're really asking the $2 million question. And that's what the entire community journalism industry is focused on right now is how do we go forward? We have been a print-centric industry for our entire history. And now we're trying to shift to this digital format that does not lend itself to that old homespun security blanket of your local weekly newspaper, which is what we used to be, is that we were that common thread, something you could fall back on, you knew it was true. That's not where we're at today. And I don't know. I really don't know where the local news industry is going. We depend now on philanthropy for journalism. And there are starving people in the world, too, you know, and that demand generosity and philanthropy. And I just don't know that journalism can survive on philanthropy. It's got to depend on people supporting it broadly.
When we talk to our young people and we talk to them about like, where are you getting your news? Like, what are you looking at? A lot of them will say like X or Threads, Instagram, Facebook. And it's one of the things that we're trying to teach is media literacy,
how do you understand Iranian history on TikTok, you know?
Right.
How can you ever come to an appreciation of Persian culture and its history with, you know, Sunnis and Shia and and Israel? you know, come on, it's you can't, and that's why you think you can just go throw a few bombs on Tehran and they'll just hop too, you know.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that one, getting young people interested in seeking out the truth is hard. And then it's okay, when you do seek out the truth, what do you do with that truth? It's one of those things that we're working on.
And it matters. What goes on in Iran matters to how much you're paying for gas.
Yeah.
Which is choking the atmosphere.
it's all related.
So, yeah. But, you know, you got to read really. And the human brain is programmed to read, to analyze, to think. And, you know, now we're operating in a visual society. People are, again, consuming most of their news via video. They want short video.
Yes.
And how do you understand nitrogen pollution of the Gulf of Mexico and its impact on the shrimping industry if you haven't read up on it?
I think that we have been trying to change with the times. We started out as just a publication, a magazine, a print publication. And this was back in 2015, 2014, when magazines were still fairly popular. Teen Vogue was still around and doing
well. Man, it's fast. It just happened so fast.
It's so quick. And now all the girls are like, we want to do videos, short form videos. Right. That's what we're interested in. And so we try and change with the times, but I think that we still, as an organization, we're holding on to print publishing still so much because.
So are we. That's our lifelong. It's yeah. still our foundation.
Yeah.
And it's still a very serendipitous way to gather and to glean information is looking through ads and lounging through and then looking at a picture, a pretty picture, and then reading something really serious. But that's not what people want, apparently. As a result, we have news deserts where there's, you know, hundreds of counties, including in Iowa, have no local news source. Just outside the Quad Cities, you know, the Centerville, Iowegian closed down. It was one of the oldest businesses in Iowa. So we have to invent new ways to support community media.
We have some quick rapid fire questions for you. So this is our rapid fire segment. What is one word that describes the Mississippi River?
Long.
A book that every young person should read.
The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Ooh, good one.
And note that Mark Twain lived in Muscatine and so did with his mother.
No way. Brother.
Yeah.
I did not know.
Worked at the Muscatine Journal.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a fun fact. What's one environmental myth you wish people would stop believing?
That climate change is a hoax.
Me too. If you could have every teenager learn one lesson about the environment, what would it be?
That the earth will heal if we let it.
What's one thing people can do this week to help protect local waterways?
Volunteer to be a water quality monitor.
Ooh, and how would one go about that?
All you got to do is just go dip your cup in the river and check it with a strip. It's real easy. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources would be a place to start.
Art, thank you so much for sharing your time and your insights with us. Your work reminds us that we need to continue to ask questions. We need to start paying more attention, and telling the truth can really honestly make a difference. To our listeners, this is a reminder that environmental justice starts with understanding the places that you call home. It starts with asking questions. It starts with being curious and knowing that what we do today will affect generations to come. Thank you so much to our listeners, and thank you for listening to this special edition of Love Girls the Podcast, Rooted, Girls, the River, and the Fight for Environmental Justice. Art, is there a way that people can follow you, find you? How can people stay connected with you?
Sure. First of all, we do have a couple videos on water quality and cancer under the rubric What's Eating Iowa on YouTube. And then we have our own website, stormlake.com. And I'm on Substack at Art Cullen's Notebook.
Love it. And I love Substack. So you will be getting a follow from me very soon. But great. I appreciate the work that you're doing. I appreciate you sitting down and hanging out with us for a little bit. You are so wise and you're funny, and you've been an absolute joy to have on the podcast. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, you're very flattering. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Of course. This has been another episode of Love Girls, the Podcast. You'll be hearing from us really, really soon. Bye.